Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
So, medical marijuana, and we're talking several scientific studies here now, proven to be an effective treatment for if you have no appetite, for glaucoma, for nausea, for pain, arthritis, insomnia. It can really help ease the side effects of chemotherapy. It can ease the symptoms of other serious diseases such as AIDS and Alzheimer's. And so, you know, listening to having Nancy Barrick talk about drug czar Gil Kerlikowske say, you know, people call up and say, I've got a problem and that problem is marijuana. I wonder how many people call up Alcoholics Anonymous on a daily basis and say, I have a problem. That problem is alcohol. I think the abuse of any substance, regardless of whether it is marijuana or alcohol, is what the issue is here, not the effectiveness. And I know that there is a study that has come out of Arizona recently that says, you know, we really can't find any benefit to this. Horse pucky. You know, we've been looking at medical marijuana effectiveness for decades now. And, you know, one study out of Arizona is the one that, you know, people like Gil Kerlikowske want to grab hold of. And I think medical marijuana should absolutely be considered as a treatment option for people who return, military members who return to the country suffering from PTSD. And everybody associates marijuana, by the way, with smoking marijuana. You can ingest marijuana in a variety of ways. Probably the most benign is vaporizers, because I think a lot of people have discovered the benefit of using marijuana with vaporizers, which just effectively eliminates the toxins that are produced by the smoke. The smoke is a toxin, but you can ingest it in food. There's a whole slew of different ways of using medical marijuana to ease the symptoms of the disease and the condition that you have without influencing taking the negative influences that marijuana can sometimes produce. Morgan Fox is with the Marijuana Policy Project, joins me here on Newsline PM this afternoon. Hi, Morgan.
Hi, Ken.
So what is your take on all of this? You know, particularly this study out of Arizona now. What do you think of that?
Well, the study out of Arizona needs to be taken with a grain of salt for several reasons. One, it was specifically looking at conditions that Arizona is currently considering adding to it, the qualifying conditions for its medical marijuana program, and was commissioned by the Department of Health. So there are definitely, this is a state where the governor and the attorney general are both very much against the medical marijuana program. So something should be at least considered when looking at the study. Another thing is that this is not an actual clinical trial. This is a meta-analysis of a whole bunch of different other studies that didn't actually do any direct research. It just combined the results of a lot of studies, many of which were done with the express purpose of trying to find negative health effects of marijuana.
You know what this reminds me
of? A lot of the research that we need to do just hasn't been done yet because of federal interference, because the National Institute of Drug Abuse does not like funding or allowing studies that are looking for potential benefits.
You know what this sort of reminds me of? It's kind of like, you know, the study one day that says coffee's good for you, and then next month the study that says, oh, coffee's terrible for you. Or the study that says, don't eat broccoli. Oh, you got to eat broccoli. It depends on what that study's nature is, who funded it, what the purpose is, who's the driving force behind it. And it irritates the hell out of me that we are at this juncture at this point in time, and we're still struggling to acknowledge that there are genuine, scientifically proven benefits from marijuana with people with various medical conditions.
Well, particularly what you mentioned, veterans, I agree with you that it absolutely should be the right of any returning service person to be able to use the medicine that their doctor thinks works the best for them. And there are mountains of anecdotal reports showing that marijuana use does, in fact, help post-traumatic stress disorder. There have actually been some studies done on animals showing that use of marijuana within 24 hours of a traumatic event can actually prevent PTSD. But unfortunately, the United States government decided that it's just too risky to allow that sort of research to go on because they can't have veterans being given marijuana in a controlled clinical setting. So they decided to deny a study that was meant to study that just late last year. And when we have interference in science the way we do, which is obviously so politicized, we're not going to be able to have any sort of rational discussion about these policies.
Well, let me ask you, why does the federal government have the authority to prohibit these kinds of studies? Because it's because of the classification of the drug?
In order for the FDA to be able to approve a study and for anyone to be able to conduct such a research, they have to get approval from the National Institute of Drug Abuse because they are the only legal supplier of research marijuana in the country, at least on a federal level. There are lots of experiments going on at the state level, particularly in universities and in states where medical marijuana is already legal, and there's been a lot of progress there, but if you want anything that's going to have any effect on FDA ratings or that is going to be considered in a federal paradigm, you have to get NIDA to approve it. And they are not in the habit of approving anything that is not specifically looking for health detriments from use. They don't want to find out about benefits.
So how do we navigate this bureaucratic maze in respect to a legitimate study of marijuana that would be accepted by federal authorities so that some type of objective opinion can be offered on it?
Well, I think particularly in the case of PTSD studies, people really need to let their lawmakers and let the administration know that it is completely unconscionable to block research into something that has been shown among, according to reports of people that have used it, to have great effect, particularly with veterans. I mean, we've been involved in foreign wars for almost 10 years now, or over 10 years now, and the weight that it is starting to take on our social structure and our ability to our mental health systems is really starting to just become staggering. And the fact that the government would deny treatment to people who have risked their lives for this country just because they're a little bit worried about minor policy changes or because they have some sort of a vested interest in the status quo is absolutely unacceptable. And people really need to make sure that their leaders and lawmakers know that they feel that way.
But, you know, as long as you have the Gil Kerlikowskis of the world, and, you know, I liked Kerlikowski when he was a police chief here in Seattle. I did, although I thought he was a little bit too much of a politician and not as much of a cop as he should have been. And in this case, he's continuing in that vein. He's far too much of a politician to look at the legitimate purpose of using medical marijuana as associated with PTSD.
Well, the difference is that when Mr. Kerlikowski was the top cop in Seattle, he wasn't required by law to lie. Part of Mr. Kerlikowski's job description as the drug czar is to fight any efforts at legalization or removing penalties from currently illicit drugs, meaning that it is part of his legal job description, and he is required by law to do whatever in his power to stop policy reform from happening.
All right. Morgan Fox with the Marijuana Policy Project. I like your advice. I think that we should use it more, contacting directly our congressional representatives back in D.C. and letting them know how we feel about this. Thanks for the conversation. I appreciate it.
And thank you. If you want to find out more, go to mpp.org.
All right. Thank you. mpp.org. You got that. In a moment, you didn't get pickles on these sandwiches, something far more dangerous.
What happens next happens on the Como Afternoon News today at 3. Now, Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Got to tell you, when I heard of this story, the passengers on these flights, these Delta flights from Amsterdam to the United States, my family and I, we flew Delta Airlines to the Turks and Caicos this vacation that I just got back from. And as a matter of fact, had that very same turkey sandwich served to us on the flight. We didn't find any needles, obviously. And obviously it wasn't prepared by the same people because the sandwiches that we're talking about were put together by something, what is it, Gate Gourmet in Amsterdam. What I'm talking about, in case you're unaware of it, is there were four needles found in different sandwiches aboard different Delta flights that originated in Amsterdam and were headed to, I know one of the flights was headed to Seattle. I think another one was headed to Minneapolis, a couple of flights to Atlanta. And on the flights, there were at least one sandwich and maybe two that were found to have had what had been described as sewing needles within the sandwich. And one person bit into this sandwich, and the needle actually poked him through the roof of his mouth. And when he pulled it out and he, you know, pulled the food off of it and everything, found that it was this thin needle, probably about maybe an inch and a quarter long, something in that vein. Reported it to the flight attendants. The flight attendants didn't make any announcement of any kind, but did go through the aircraft cabin and began confiscating the sandwiches that had been provided. So now we've got the FBI, we've got Dutch authorities, we've got a lot of people investigating exactly, you know, what provoked someone to put needles in sandwiches that would be served to air passengers on their way from Amsterdam to the United States. Here's the ABC story that we got from Pierre Thomas.
A simple meal, a turkey sandwich made terrifying. A half dozen sewing needles found in sandwiches on four separate Delta flights this past Sunday. At least one person injured after biting in.
It was on the second bite into the sandwich. It actually poked to the top of my mouth. It was about a one-inch long straight needle.
Federal authorities, including the FBI, are investigating who had access to the food for flights originating out of Amsterdam bound for the U.S. A father and son on two separate flights were also injured. Authorities are trying to figure out if it was just a coincidence. Delta Airlines released a statement saying it has taken immediate action with our in-flight caterer in Amsterdam to ensure the safety and quality of the food we provide on board our aircraft. The sandwiches were prepared in the kitchen of the Gate Gourmet Catering Company at the Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam. All such sandwiches have now been removed from flights. Gate Gourmet operates in 28 countries. It serves an average of 9,700 flights every day of the year and over 300 million passengers annually.
You can't check every sandwich that goes aboard a plane. And I think, unfortunately, this demonstrates to people who want to do bad things that this is a gaping hole.
In a statement, Gate Gourmet said, "We take this matter very seriously." Gate Gourmet immediately launched a full investigation to determine the root cause of this disturbing incident, and we are treating this as a criminal act. Last year, ABC affiliate WSB performed an investigation with an employee who worked for Gate Gourmet. This video allegedly shows how easy it was to add unauthorized food to an unaccompanied cart.
At the time, the company suggested that the investigation did not account for all the layers of its security. But with this new scare, more questions about the safety of its food is sure to be raised.
Boy, that's, you know, the hanging statement there is that there is no way to prevent some demented SOB from doing something like putting foreign objects into meals or sandwiches or food that is going to be served aboard an airliner to passengers. There is nothing you can do. There is no, absolutely no way to guard against that. You can't inspect every sandwich or every meal that is going to be served and make sure that there are no foreign objects in there. This to me sounds like some terribly sick and disgruntled employee who thought they would wreak havoc with the airlines or with Gate Gourmet. I don't know if this is someone who has a grudge against Delta or someone who has a grudge against Gate Gourmet. But, no pun intended, I think finding the person who did this is going to be like finding a needle in a haystack. I mean, how the hell do you track that down? That's exactly what it is, a needle in a haystack.
You've heard what's happening. Now, find out what it means to you. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
So for the first time in 2 weeks, I go to my Facebook page thinking, well, I'll see if anybody's been throwing anything at me here with any of the issues, topics that we've been talking about here today. And I come across, I come across this one comment from, I think it's Duran, D-E-R-A-N, Duran Ludd. And he posted this back on July 9th, and he said, replace Mr. Schramm with Elisa Jaffe. She's more interesting and a more interesting journalist and an on-air personality than Mr. Schramm is. Sorry, but it's true. I'm crushed. I take a little vacation. EJ is kind enough to take on this grueling task of Early Morning KVI and my show, and I get that, I'm sorry.
Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
So a couple of guys go up to Vancouver. They're going to have, they go up and spend the weekend in Vancouver or whatever. And on their way back into the United States, going through the border, these nefarious U.S. citizens got caught trying to smuggle some illegal material back into the United States. Chris Sweeney is one of the individuals I'm talking to. You nefarious young man, you. What the hell were you thinking, Chris? Don't you know about... I mean, I thought everybody knew that these were illegal. Were they Cuban cigars?
No.
Was it a bag of marijuana?
Nope, nothing fun like that.
Was it illegal pharmaceuticals?
It was candy eggs. They're called Kinder eggs. Be very careful about them. They're very serious business.
So you're smuggling Kinder eggs. What is it, Kinder?
Kinder eggs.
Kinder eggs. You're trying to smuggle Kinder eggs back into the United States. What are you, an underground Kinder egg dealer?
We had no idea before our trip that these were not allowed in the United States.
So describe for me a Kinder egg.
It's a hollow chocolate egg, like a chocolate bunny or something.
Is this dark chocolate, milk chocolate? I want the full details here, pal.
I think it's milk chocolate, and it's coated with something they call custard on the inside. It's kind of a filling. And then, so that's a hard shell. And then on the inside, they have a plastic egg with a toy inside of it.
So it's kind of like got an M&M type of shell on the top.
Well, it's thicker than that. It's like a chocolate Easter bunny. You know how it's kind of hollow inside?
Right.
So it's that kind of hard chocolate covered in foil. And then, but then rattling around in the space inside is a plastic egg with a tiny toy inside.
Ah, so it's the the plastic is like what kind of a toy?
In the one that we opened yesterday, it was a little character with a stamp, like an ink stamp.
You sick man. Trying to smuggle a little plastic character with a stamp back into the United States.
Well, that would have been fine if it was by itself, but because it's inside this candy egg thing, the United States government has decided that it is dangerous and a choking hazard, and it's illegal. We were detained for several hours and threatened with fines of over $10,000 because we had six of them.
Are these sold everywhere up in Canada?
Oh, yeah, they're everywhere. And we've seen them before, and our
don't say that out loud. You brought them before.
No, we didn't bring them before.
Oh,
we'd
okay.
Seen them.
Oh, okay.
I'd seen them before. We'll never bring them again.
Because otherwise, the Border Patrol folks will be back at they'll be on your front porch pounding on your door, pal. They'll have one of those big battering rams and going, "Police!" Bam! And they're inside.
Well, and you know, my husband and I are always a little concerned when we go to the border because they ask us what our relationship is, why we're there, and we say, well, we're married in Canada, we're married in California, New York, but not in Washington. And so we're kind of, they interrogate you, and there was no problem with that, but then they looked in our trunk and saw these horrible...
Why did they decide to look in your trunk?
I don't know. It seemed like some cars they were looking and some they weren't, and they just decided to look in our trunk.
So you know what? You're one of those suspicious gay couples. That's what it is.
Must be, men. So
how big is the how big is the plastic egg inside the chocolate?
It's about a fourth the size of one of those Easter plastic eggs, that you hide for Easter egg hunts.
Gotcha. Okay. And they actually, and my understanding is, in all seriousness here, that they could have hit you with a $2,500 fine per egg, correct?
Per egg. bag, right? And we had six of them, so that would have been $15,000.
And how long did they keep you detained at the border for trying to smuggle this stuff in?
Well, we had about a half an hour with the first guy explaining to us how terrible this was, and then we had to drive over to another detention place where somebody told us to put our cell phones up on the seats, don't bring them inside, but leave the cell phones out on the car seats. And then we went in there and stood in line for about an hour. And then when we got up, the guy that we talked to just sort of rolled his eyes and said, you know, just don't do it again. And then they didn't even take the eggs. This contraband was allowed to just sail right through the border.
Wait a minute. You're telling me they didn't confiscate the eggs? They let you take it back.
We were very surprised when we got, we went to Deception Pass, you know, to take some pictures, and we looked in the trunk, and they were still there.
did they use that long thing with the mirror under your car and all of that stuff, too?
I didn't see them do that, but, you know, once we left our car out in the parking lot and went into the detention center, I don't know what they were doing. We saw them ripping some other cars apart and looking through cell phones and stuff, so... Maybe once they realized that we were just Kinder Egg smugglers, they figured that none of that other stuff was necessary.
Well, maybe they, because I suspect that, you know, Kinder Egg smugglers probably travel in packs. So there may have been a whole group of Kinder Egg smugglers.
Maybe somebody set off their radar earlier in the day and they were just on the lookout.
So from the amount of time, from when you first arrived at the border, how much time was it before you were finally cut loose?
It was about 2.5-3 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not a real efficient system there.
Meanwhile, a couple of truckloads of marijuana got through.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, I mean, I was thinking I could have had a gun. That would have been perfectly legal.
Well, but a gun is not Kinder Egg.
Well, right. I mean, you got to think about the danger to society.
Yeah, you're not going to ingest a bullet. Well, I guess maybe. Depends on, you know, how you fire the gun.
But, very true.
So, you know, I got to tell you now, I'm totally curious. I wonder if I could order these things online.
You cannot.
You can't?
No.
Oh.
If you try to import them or if you have a Canadian person mail them to you and you're caught, there's all sorts of fines as well. I looked into this quite a bit because I was just fascinated on the drive back, you know. How this was even possible.
I can't believe there's this much attention paid to Kinder Eggs.
Yeah, they said they confiscated something like 80,000 of them over the last year.
Oh, man. And I used to worry about bringing back a Cuban cigar, you know? I would take the band off it so that it, and I'd say, well, yeah, it's a hand-rolled cigar. I'd put it in a different tube. But, man, you don't get hit for as big a fine as a cigar as you do with the Kinder Egg.
Yeah, these are very, very important.
Well, my best advice to you, Chris, is since those eggs were not confiscated, they're still in your possession, correct?
We gave most of them away, but I think we have one or two left.
Well, okay, then be very careful when you eat them because you don't want to swallow that plastic egg.
Well, we should probably destroy them, right? I mean...
Oh, no, I wouldn't destroy them. In fact, I'd put them on display somewhere. Chris, it was fun talking to you, man. I just found this to be an incredible story. I couldn't believe it. Thank you for putting up with me.
Absolutely.
All right, take care. Chris Sweeney there. Just so that you folks know, because we, you know, here at Newsline PM, we want to give you news you can use. You don't want to get caught at the Canadian border with a Kinder Egg.
Time to discuss, dissect, and debate the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Well, back in March, he signed a $31 million contract that will keep him a Seahawk for the next 4 years. But over the weekend, Marshawn Lynch was pulled over and arrested for suspicion, I guess, of driving under the influence. There's still a lot of vagaries here. Apparently, the police report says he was given the choice of whether or not he wanted a blood test or a whether he wanted a breathalyzer test. He opted for the breathalyzer, and apparently the breathalyzer showed that his blood alcohol level was over the 0.08 limit, but the exact number is not known. Whatever is in that report has now been forwarded to the local Alameda County District Attorney's Office, and it'll be determined there what, if any, charges are going to be filed against him. Danny O'Neill with the Seattle Times joins me here this afternoon on Newsline PM. Hi, Danny.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. So Mr. Skittles is skidding into some trouble here.
Yes, yeah. It's a difficult. This is one of the more problematic times of year for NFL players. Kind of this window between the end of the offseason training and the start of training camp. There's been a number of arrests, and over the weekend, Marshawn Lynch was arrested on suspicion of DUI. We don't know a lot about this case, but we do know those very basics, that he was pulled over early Saturday morning, 3:20, and subsequently arrested and booked into jail and then cited and released.
Now, he's got some issues in his past. I know he pled guilty to misdemeanor charges because of the gun possession.
He had a weapons charge, correct. Right. He had two things happen. In 2008, in Buffalo, there was an incident in how it's been characterized, that a hit-and-run incident. He was not arrested in that case, as far as I know, but he was investigated for striking a pedestrian and driving off. Now, Marshawn subsequently said that he did not know that he had hit a pedestrian, that he did not realize it. And the descriptions of what had happened at that time are, it's tough to find out exactly what happened. I think that some people have said that there was someone dancing in the street and Marshawn was driving very, very slowly to get through there. As far as Marshawn said, he did not realize that someone had been struck. And he ended up, he had his license revoked for a time. And then the following year, he was arrested on a gun charge. A gun was found in a backpack that contained other items belonging to him. He eventually pleaded guilty to what was a misdemeanor weapons charge. And he was suspended the first three games of the 2009 season.
For the gun charge, why was he suspended? Did he not have proper permit or whatever to carry a weapon?
I don't know the particulars of that. I know that it was a misdemeanor weapons offense. I would assume that would mean it was not licensed or permitted, or he did not have a permit to carry the weapon. But I don't know, because it happened in California, and I'm not as familiar with all the statutes, and he was not on the Seahawks at that time, so I have not seen the actual police report. I'm trying to track that down, but it was a weapons violation.
So now this latest wrinkle, this puts him in a precarious position in terms of the NFL, correct?
It does, and it might. And this is where I want to emphasize there are a couple things that we don't know. Yes, it does, because it puts him, the commissioner, Roger Goodell, has taken a very strong stance in terms of players and their personal conduct. Kind of everybody's known that, and we've gone over that. It's particularly someone who is a repeat offender. What we don't know is, will Roger Goodell look at this and see someone who has had previous trouble, who can't stay out of trouble, and has now been arrested again, and act regardless of the outcome of the criminal proceeding? He has shown in the past that he does not necessarily depend upon the criminal justice system to determine whether or not punishment is warranted. There are times where he has acted. Pac-Man Jones is one, a player who was arrested multiple times, did not have as many convictions, but he was suspended because of the sort of the aggregate total of his actions. Ben Roethlisberger was not charged after an investigation for sex assault. Goodell suspended him because it's the belief being that it's not enough simply not to be charged of a criminal crime. That doesn't mean you're guilty, that you can. The threshold is not whether you face a criminal charge or not, whether you to receive punishment. It's also possible, however, that this is Marshawn Lynch has not had a previous DUI, and could the commissioner, and the commissioner is generally not suspended players for their first DUI. Could the commissioner look at this and say, this is a guy that stayed out of trouble for 3.5 years? Is there a statute of limitations for this idea of a repeat offender? Because he has not been in trouble since early 2009.
See, and I got to tell you, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, this is the more grievous offense.
Oh, I, yeah.
Of the three that he's been, you know,
And I'm not trying to minimize or equivocate on the sort of what I would call the public safety and the personal responsibility of the incident. But we don't know what's going to happen. At this point, we don't even know what his BAC was measured at and whether or not he'll face charges. Yeah. So I guess whether or not he faces punishment doesn't depend entirely on whether or not he faces charges. And there's obviously the details of being pulled over. It was after 3 a.m. According to the officer's incident report, he was swerving.
There's a lot more to come out on this. I want to say thank you, Danny O'Neill, for filling in some of the blanks there. I appreciate it a lot there, kiddo.
All right, take care.
All right, take care. I bet you the Seahawks right now wringing their hands wondering what the hell's going on.
Reporting the news, understanding the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Paging Mr. Jason Marzano. Please go to the courtesy microphone. Mr. Marzano.
What's up?
You're a music fan, aren't you?
Yeah,
somebody said you're really into music.
Who said that?
Well, just somebody that told me. I don't have to qualify all my sources, you know.
Okay, and?
Well, since you are such a music fan, I wanted to bring your attention to this particular piece of news, which involves music. There's going to be a new album released, the first since 2005, apparently. And there's also going to be, that's going to be in the spring of next year, 2013. So you're still going to have to wait a little bit, but that's going to coincide with the band's 20th anniversary, which is next April. There's going to be all five original members are coming together on this. They announced it on Good Morning America, and I know you're a big fan of the Backstreet Boys, so I just wanted to bring you up to speed so that you didn't, you know, get hit with this information cold. So I'm just kind of bringing it up there for you, all right? You're welcome. Anytime, pal. In a moment, how much you going to pay for geese?